Like the show? Want to listen to episodes early? Consider becoming a patron. Starting at the $3 a month level, patrons get access to a custom patron-only feed where we put out episodes of upstairs studio podcasts like the Childcare Bar and Grill, Miss Becky's Classroom, That Early Childhood Nerd, the Renegade Rules podcast, and others early. That feed is just for patrons. You could be one of them. Go to patreon.com/playvolutionhq or click the link in the show description to learn more. Podcast, Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studio. In studio with me, Tasha Johnson, my lovely wife.
Aw, thank you. Aloha.
And Lisa Murphy, not my lovely wife.
Hi.
You know, people, we're recording here in the new downstairs upstairs studio in front of the fireplace. Lisa and Tasha didn't bother to get dressed for recording
today.
Hell no.
I know you guys. Well, we do have clothes on.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
The fire isn't that hot.
Yeah, I guess what I meant is they hadn't put themselves together.
No, we did not put ourselves together. Yeah,
I did brush my teeth.
I got up, got dressed like a normal fucking human being, and they just kind of rolled out of bed and rolled into the studio. But, you know.
Whatever. It's Jammy Pod.
But the thing is, we're trying
Jammy to. Jammy Pod 2019.
We do the things we can to prevent podcast turnover. So
podcast burnout.
So what are we talking about this time, Lisa Murphy?
Well, it is turnover was what we started thinking about, the turnover in the childcare industry. But then, while I was scanning some stuff I found online, I wanted to have a conversation about the difference between turnover and burnout. Because I think that you can get burnt out and just keep your burnt out ass still there, which doesn't lead to turnover.
Yes.
Yes, yeah. Definitely. Mm-hmm.
Okay, this has been the Childcare Bar and Grill podcast. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye. Well, I think everybody probably listening at some point either worked with somebody or somebody in their building that everybody kind of knew needed a frickin' break. And they either weren't self-aware enough to give themselves a break or nobody had the balls to say, you need a break.
Yeah, well, I've talked about this on the podcast before, but it's been a long time. I'm going to tell you a story about Jane. Jane was a child care center. I think she retired now, finally. About time. A child care center director here in my community in Northwest Iowa. And she was with her program for a long, 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 long time.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
Probably 3/4 longer than she probably should have been, because she was burnt out for fucking decades. It affected everything that went on in her program. It affected staffing. It affected children. It affected parents. What burnout often does in a center setting is it's infectious. It kind of radiates through the program. And if you've got one really burnt out person, especially if it's the director, mm-hmm. that will impact the lives of everybody that walks in and out of that door. Jane didn't leave. She wanted to. She stuck around because she was the director and she worked a long time to get that job. And she had a small but existent pension she was trying to get fully vested, and so she hung around. And that program suffered constantly from high turnover. Not her, other
yeah.
people who could only work in that stressful, anxious, tense environment for so long. It affected families. It affected the direct behavior of kids in the programs, because in some instances when those people stick around, it just gets so tense and so anxious and so, I don't know, there's a better word than dysfunctional, I'm sure, but that's kind of a version of what it is. And the best thing those people could do is leave and do something different with their lives, and yet they don't.
Well, I'm going to interrupt you. I and I don't know if you had more to say about the Jane scenario.
No.
But like the other day at the gig, I made a comment about how if administration doesn't step up and have the balls to let go of the dead weight, they're going to end up losing, you know, the good ones.
Mm-hmm.
And dude, for reals, like six people stood up and started clapping and admin was in the room. And I'm like, ooh, mental note.
Yeah.
But it's tricky when the burnt out person, trickier, is your admin. Because in that hierarchy of, you know, who's allowed to talk to who and who has what roles and responsibilities, there's probably nobody actually providing that direct care that feels that they're in any position to be like, yo, you know, we're firing you or whatever. Whereas top down, they have more of that, at least socially accepted, that the hierarchy, like it's their job to assist in that. But when does that power dynamic go up the ladder? You know, at what point does the staff come together and say, you know what? We don't know who we need to talk to, but you need to be let go.
Yeah.
It's an entirely different dynamic.
Yeah, years ago, I did a gig in South Dakota for one program.
So it was like 10 people in the room?
Under 20.
Yeah.
And it was a 6-hour burnout thing. And the director was there for the morning. And it was kind of I would describe the interaction I had from the group as cautious.
Mm-hmm.
And then she had something else to do in the afternoon, and so she was gone after lunch for the last 2 or 3 hours. And it was very quickly made aware to me that she was 92.5% of the problem they, as a program, were having. Because she was burnt out and she didn't listen to them and she was dealing with her own stuff and they had to walk on tiptoes around her and so here's the dynamic. She's the one that hired me and she's the one that
and she picked that topic.
Yeah, and so she knew there was a thing and cared enough to bring me in to talk about it. And
but
yet,
to talk to the people who she thinks had the problem.
Yeah, and so after the fact, I let her know because I was kind of given permission to let her know that she was what was the catalyst, I guess, for lack of a better word, for the problems that
they
were
having.
How did you
know? Walk me through that. So did you talk to her that day when she came back? Did you call
her?
Oh,
she didn't come back. I sent her an email.
Yeah, and she was willing to have a conversation with you about whether or not that was true or not? Or
We exchanged some emails.
Yeah.
Because they were kind of like, somebody needs to talk to her. And I'm like, I'll talk to her. And I did.
Was she receptive?
She seemed to be. And I mean, again, she knew there was a problem and she had hired me to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of, I mean, I'm a third party, fairly non-biased party. So I think she, and it's been years.
I was going to say, do you have any follow-up?
Yeah, no, like, I mean, we exchanged emails for weeks afterwards. I don't know what she finally ended up doing. I suppose I should have done more follow-up, but you know, her check cleared and I moved on to, it just trailed off. So I don't know if that means she moved on or, but I mean, that's a huge thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, those things are happening all the time. The example you shared about those people like, preach it. I have that experience all the time when I talk about that topic. And so that's a big piece of this. There are plenty of people that stick around in this profession who should have left because, I mean, they're burnt out and they don't care anymore. And I get why they hang out because it's a job. And there are places in early learning you can work now and make a halfway decent living sometimes. And so if it's one of those jobs that you don't feel like you have other options and the fact that change is difficult and scary and uncomfortable, I get why people stay. But on the other hand, I've had plenty of experience around this topic with people where when you get brave enough to move on, life is just about always better.
And I would also add that, because I agree 100%, moving on also doesn't necessarily have to happen if you're That's not going to come out right. What I'm saying is that burning out isn't the only reason to potentially choose to move on. You could realize that there's just not a fit. Like, you could maybe love coming, but really suck at the job. You know what I'm saying? Like you could enjoy, I would think, I don't know, I would think that you could enjoy the job, but to an outside observer watching you actually do the job, like, you're not really that... Yeah. Good at it. But I love you. I love being here. I like playing outside with the kids, and I like doing the projects. Yeah, but you're not, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to make this up. I'm just trying to say that it doesn't always have to be negative as to why you're counseling somebody out.
Yeah, I mean, there are people that just don't fit in this profession. There are college professors who listen to this podcast. I don't know why. We appreciate it. Who I've had conversations with about the fact that they feel one of their big jobs is in their classrooms is to help people make different choices for their profession because they just don't have it, whatever it is, to work in early learning. It's that goodness of fit thing, and they feel that, you know, they want to nurture the people that they feel have what it takes to work in this field and help other people, the others, make better, different decisions because long term their lives are going to be better that
way. I think that's, it's preventative medicine if you ask me, you know.
Hi, Jennifer.
If we can she must be one of the professors. If we can get two or three of these people to realize that this isn't the best place for them, then maybe this turnover rate number would eventually start going down because we did work more effectively on the front end.
Yeah. I mean, you were looking at turnover numbers before we got started. It's around 30-40%, mm-hmm. right? And that's when I did the Finding Your Smile Again and Keeping Your Smile books back in the late single digit 2000s. That's the numbers I was seeing too. So that seems to be pretty consistent.
And the one article that I did see before we started recording, I said that 62% of the administrators were saying that it takes an average of 2 months to replace the people that end up leaving.
Yeah.
You know, and so along the way, you look at that window of relationships starting to suffer and people having to pull extra weight and having to, you know, band together and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And the usual, this is actually a topic that somebody from the Facebook had asked us to unpack a little bit. And, you know, probably for the obvious reasons, there were no surprise reasons as to why people leave the profession. I mean, it's money and it's no benefits and it's, you know, I get sick and I have no medical care and I'm playing with babies and I'm getting sick and I don't have any medical care. And the low pay and you know, the soundbite that's been around since forever, which is you can still make more money flipping burgers than you can in a lot of centers.
Yeah.
Fast food. Back in the day it was parking lot attendants, but I don't even know if that is even still a thing. But that was always the analogy that valet guys make more than childcare people.
Yeah, but I mean, I get that, but I mean, people know that when they apply for the jobs in the first place. So, I mean, to apply for a job,
there's no benefits.
You know what the pay range is going to be.
Not a surprise.
Yeah, and to act surprised when you quit 5 years later. Because and so I'm wondering.
I don't know if it's a surprise. I would argue. I don't think anybody's surprised. But they'll leave abruptly because somebody down the street's going to offer them 50 cents more an hour.
Well, they will.
That's always surprising.
Or is it their go-to excuses for leaving it? Don't feel as bad.
I think it's kind of an. I think it's a kind of a easy to throw out reason for leaving, because other issues are. I mean, they don't want to dig into the. Mm-hmm. The deeper stuff. I think it's just kind of somebody's asking. I think it's kind of a disingenuous answer in the experience of some people.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
And I don't know that other than anecdotally from conversations with people like.
Well,
like
if I know that this program, like if I'm really leaving the program because they're not developmentally appropriate and the kids have no time outside and we're not playing and it's overly controlling and rigid, I'm not going to get into that with the admin team. Especially if I have attempted along the way to maybe make some baby step changes. If the program is showing me that we're not going any farther than what we're doing right now, I'm not going to get on a philosophical moral monologue. Yeah. I'm going to just say I need to make some more money.
Yeah, and I'm not discounting that as a valid reason. I'm just saying in exit interviews, that's probably an easy go-to answer that gets you out of the fucking exit interview and out of your life.
And maybe if people were more honest, maybe there would be some more changes. If we started to actually see some data that said in an exit interview, like, come on, how many people are actually doing exit interviews, right? But anyway.
Not enough.
But if we got some hard data that said, I am leaving because this program is not developmentally appropriate, like that would be some very interesting data that could potentially lead to some policy changes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, maybe not.
I'm actually thinking that might be a really kind of interesting, intriguing research project. There's somebody, I'm tossing that out for somebody. Go find all the people who've left a childcare job in the last 6 months and get the real reasons why they left. That's a capstone project. That's a master's investigative level project. And then let me know what you find.
There you go. Sam, get on that.
Well, yeah, I was thinking to conference evaluations just as a sidebar because people just fill them out to...
Get the certificate,
but they don't actually fill them out truthfully.
Oh, yeah, right? We've done that for forever.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, if you do happen to have an exit interview, you should be truthful.
Honest.
Yeah. So you can have those conversations and...
Which I guess it could be... I mean, and now we're unpacking, like, all the shit is in the what-ifs. And, like, if you're in a small community... And there, you know, there's only 3 childcare centers in the entire town. Chances are, you're probably just going to be like, yeah, no, I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if there's, because you might run into those people a week later or 2 days later, you know, there's so many other reasons why I think maybe you would or would not say certain things. I've never had an exit interview. Ever.
No.
I'm sorry. Well, you've worked for yourself for a long time.
Yeah, when I get frustrated, I just sit myself down and have a nice conversation.
I'm out of here. But tell me why.
Are you out of here?
Are you really? What do we need to do to change to keep you, you know?
So, I mean, there's...
Well, the other... are you having a thought that you're trying to formulate?
No, kind of, but go ahead.
Well, I wanted to see if there was a way to link it back. Tasha and I were bantering a little bit before you hit record about the crazy wild notion idea that I had a couple weeks ago that I shared with the Wednesday night group about how, you know, maybe we don't really have the hiring desert problem that a lot of administrators are saying. You know, it doesn't really take 2 months to find somebody who's quality, or is it a struggle because there's people who actually want to be in the profession, but they're kind of looking in the windows and saying, I wouldn't want to be there. You know, the kids don't ever get outside, and it is overly controlling and rigid. And you know what? I'm going to take my ball and go play somewhere else. And I'm just wondering if that unintentionally we perhaps have been throwing the baby out with the bathwater, and that maybe some of the younger people who want to enter the profession this is going to sound crazy, but like that they're not as bad as maybe we've been. Not bad. That's don't take that out of context. But like maybe they're smarter than we've been giving them credit for, and maybe they're looking at some of these places where they're going to go interview and be like, you know what, that is not what I've been taught is best practice. Mm-hmm. Why the hell would I interview here?
Well, yeah, I think that's a hunk of it. And I think also as we've built in, and we talked about this a little bit in the Systems Don't Care episode we did not too long ago, we built up barriers for entry with what we're hiring requirements in some situations where, I mean, there are some places they want you to have at least a 2-year associate's degree or something before they'll hire you. And some places are only hiring people with BAs. And the thing is, we've kind of filtered out probably some people who could with a little bit of post-hiring training become very skilled in this profession with some of the bullshit that's going on before we can hire them. So I think those two in combination have shrunk the potential workforce.
And I think the inconsistency that you've unpacked thousands of times, which is, you know, all the people that are currently enrolled in a childcare degree program and nobody's mentioned play, right?
Nobody. Yeah. The a lot of them are getting training that is incongruent with the realities of working in an early learning setting.
And that could go both ways. Like they could be not learning anything about play, but maybe actually have an amazing, maybe there's 5 amazingly play-based programs in their community and they're now getting trained to think that that's not what it should look like, and then the opposite, which is that they're very, very play-based, and all they see are these 1, 2, 3 eyes on me, crisscross applesauce, so, like, why the hell would I work there?
Yeah.
So, yeah, there has been forever a disconnect often between the theory and the practice.
Yeah,
and how many people have we all at the table right now sat down with who are like, oh, my God, you know, like, my teacher in service was horrible. You know, I walked in, and I'm like, oh, my God. You know, like, they're doing all this stuff that I'm being told in school that you shouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
So we're already setting them up for, hi, welcome to one of the most inconsistent professions in the United States.
I mean, we've heard from professors that are working in training early learning people who listen to this show. And again, I don't know why you listen, but thank you.
Thank you.
But who have a hard time finding programs that they're comfortable sending their students out to.
Yeah.
And then they have to come back and unpack that with, yes, this is what we talk about in class, and this is the realities of what you're dealing with when you go out in the world.
And maybe that leads to some people going, then this is a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah.
And that's why it takes 2 months to go replace somebody, because mm-hmm. we're scaring them away from the profession.
Well, yeah. And if we're going to talk about turnover and staffing, another piece of this is there was just a new study out just a couple days ago as we record this that says women who take advantage of paid maternity parental leave after having a child are less likely to return to the workforce.
Mm.
And so in a profession that is 97%+ women, and as more programs are kind of offering that as an option in a lot of settings, I mean, it's kind of the thing in Canada and Australia, and is starting to appear in the States in some places. We're showing people the door, and they're taking that time off the first year or 6 months or whatever it is after they have a child, and saying, hey, this is pretty sweet.
Yeah,
I'm going to keep doing this. And I mean, that's a subset of the population, because not everybody can afford to become a stay-at-home parent. But the numbers seem to indicate that the people who do the math and look at the economics and have the option are vying to stay out of the workforce in some of those situations. And so that has an impact on this profession to some extent.
Well,
as well.
And to both sides of that coin, one, that then you don't have the people working coming back after a maternity leave, but then also then that's going to decrease the number of babies that are going to be needing childcare starting in the infant room.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot going over there. And, I mean, people leave their jobs for other than burnout reasons.
Yes, yes.
Absolutely. And, I mean, some of it is philosophical. And I think this show, we kind of encourage people to do that. If making changes internally doesn't work for you, and I mean,
making changes internally in the program, not internally my own self.
Yeah. Well, either one of those, I guess. I mean, really, if that's not working, sometimes the only thing you can do is move on. And then we got turnover because we've got a more transient society than we've ever had before. If you've got a spouse or a significant other that takes a job someplace else, then you mm-hmm. move on.
Mm-hmm.
And so that happens. A lot of people work in this profession because they are going to, you know, it's kind of like, I'm going to do this until my child starts school. I think this is especially family child care. They'll run a program while the children are young and then move on and do mm-hmm. something else. But I've seen people do this in centers too, where they work in a program where their child can be at work with them, and then where their child is off to school full time, they leave, and so that is a turnover impact, and so there's a lot of stuff out there. I would, you know, when I was doing those books, it seemed like burnout could be traced back as a leading cause in a lot of the burnout that was happening, but it's absolutely
of
the turnover, but not necessarily the it is far from being the only reason.
Yeah, I Googled burnout versus turnover and got what appears as a skimming of an awesome article, and I scrolled down, it was written in 1984. So clearly this is not a new topic in our industry.
Yeah, well, I'm sure back in the day when Og and Clog were hunter-gatherers, I mean, they get back to the cave at night and Og is like, oh man, this gathering is just, I'm so burnt out, my feet hurt, and all the berries, and some of those berry bushes have thorns, and my fingers are all cut up. I just can't take it anymore. And Clog is like, well, maybe it's time for a change. Maybe you should come and work with the hunting. And so they give that a try. And I mean, so it's been going on forever, right?
Apparently.
What would the transition be for, like, from gatherer to hunter? It's like you got to do a lot more running.
You'd have to find a weapon.
Yeah, you got to find a club. Hey,
I guess it's time to be done.
Well, and two, if somebody is moving from gatherer to hunter, don't you have to have somebody else step up to be gatherer then? So
you can't get off balance. Yeah, and what is it in cave person high school? Your counselor is telling you, hey.
You're not cut out for this.
Yeah, hey Glog, you're not cut out for a hunter. You got to run those mammoths off the cliff, and you're just not fast enough. I think you'd be better in the bush.
You got those tough calluses on your fingers already. The thorns won't hurt you as much.
Okay, this episode's gone totally off the tracks. This has been another episode of the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. You can find Lisa Murphy at ooeygooey.com. What's Instagram?
Ooey gooey lady
on Instagram.
Twitter, ooey gooey lady. Just Google ooey gooey lady.
Yeah,
you'll get me and Paula Deen's butter cake.
Go over to explorationsearlylearning.com or eeltoys.com to find Tasha and myself and Slinky, our head of security, and Gigi, our head of napping in the sunshine. Back soon with another episode. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
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 This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.